Nellie Myrtle Van Hook Tregaskis, born in 1882, was an elegant, classy woman whose bearing turned heads when she entered a room. She was skilled in the old-fashioned art of elocution. Having received training in it and having spent 2 years on the Chautauqua Speakers Circuit. When she was 18 or 19 years old, her parents took her younger siblings, Hubert and Ethel, and moved to Boise. They left Nell, 18 or 19, to sell the house in Illinois. One evening in the house alone, she saw a man trying to break into the cellar door. She took aim with the gun that her father had left for her and shot. She never knew if she hit him, but he did take off and did not return. In her 90s, someone snapped a picture of her riding on the back of a motorcycle as it roared through the streets of Boise. Nell Tregaskis lived life with determination, feistiness, humor, spirit, and spirituality. She and her husband, Vern, were among the founding parents of our congregation in its current incarnation, its current unbroken incarnation. There was at least one other embodiment of Unitarianism in Boise, but it didn't remain in business. There was a time of no Unitarianism. This past summer, two of our former Mormon members, Carrie Baston and Lance Pittman, presented a Sunday service on the Latter-day Saints' annual Pioneer Day celebration. They made the point that celebrating one's founders, one's pioneers, one's ancestors, is, in Alice Walker's words, to be, quote, aware that we did not make ourselves, that the line stretches all the way back, perhaps to God or to gods. Remembering our forebears, those who dug the wells from which we drink, is a spiritual exercise bringing us to a sense of humility. And Carrie and Lance also reminded us that celebrating these trusty well diggers brings us to a realization that all of us, every single one, we are all creating the future as we live our lives. In ways that we mostly can't foresee, we are, quote, pioneering. And we have choices about how we live in the presence too. Choices and responsibility. And so we are now going to have our own Pioneer Sunday each January. This is one of those famous first annuals. We will honor the people who gave so much of themselves to create and sustain the foundation of what we cherish today. And we will also take time for a little spiritual reflection on what we hope that we ourselves are bringing to birth as we live our lives. I recently spent an hour and a half or so with Julie Kryansik, who is Nell and Vern Tregaskis' 86-year-old daughter, whom I have known for more than 20 years in social justice and interfaith work. As Julie and I talked, now Julie is a faithful United Church of Christ Congregationalist member. As we talked, I was very aware that she was fleshing out my picture of a woman who was so significant in the founding and in the thriving of our fellowship at a certain time. As the picture emerged of this determined, competent, life-affirming, spiritual, no-nonsense woman, I reflected on how my own personal traits might or might not be contributing to a generous, bright future, and how some of my choices might be having various effects. As I tell you about this remarkable foremother of ours, I invite you to do likewise. Nell Van Hook was a firstborn child. A couple of years after her birth in 1882, her mother had a miscarriage and apparently was never really the same afterwards. She did have two more children, Hubert and then Ethel. And yes, Ethel is our own Ethel Hopper, whose picture is in the church library, who started Pansy Ceremony that we celebrate every Mother's Day. For whatever reasons, Nell's and Hubert's and Ethel's mother just wasn't able to tend to the babies as well as she might, so Nell did a lot of rearing of them. She learned responsibility early. The father was one of those creative men with visions of money-making ventures dancing in his head. But his business ability fell far, far short of the concepts that he was always inviting people to. His grasp on the details of life seems to have been not too strong. He took Nell to the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. She was 11. They set a meeting time and a place, and he never showed up. The family doesn't remember what happened. Julie wasn't quite sure how the family kept food on the table during Nell's childhood, but she knew it wasn't easy. After Nell had attended Bloomington Normal School in Illinois and become a teacher, she was able to help support the family in Boise. She came to Boise. This was, of course, after protecting the Illinois house from intruders and then selling it and moving here herself. It's not hard to see why Nell might have had some reservations about marriage. But she did ultimately marry Vern Tregaskis when she was in her early 40s. He had been a summertime miner and a wintertime police officer, which I don't think you can do that these days, but it struck me as interesting. Nell made it a condition of marriage that he stop being a policeman after a released prisoner threw a large rock at his head, causing him to be deaf in one ear forever after. He went to work for the IRS. In those days, you couldn't be married and be a teacher, too, so she had to stop teaching in public schools. But she continued to teach elocution from her home, including to a young lawyer named Alan Schwartzman, whose New Jersey Jewish accent did not blend in at all well with his Idaho clientele, and including a 10-year-old Tom Tompkins, our own Charlotte Tompkins' son, who can still recite with apparently grand gestures and voice the poems that he learned in Nell's class. Nell and Vern wanted children, but they had three miscarriages. She was in her mid-40s. Finally, her doctor, Dr. Pittinger, put her to bed for the entire pregnancy, and she had Julie, their only child. I'm going to switch now from Julie's memories to those of church people like Elaine Durbin and William McQuillan and Alan Schwartzman and Nancy Harms and Charlotte Tompkins. By the time the Tregaskis and Hopper families had decided to make the Unitarian congregation happen, Julie had been reared in the Congregational Church and she stayed there. So she doesn't remember very much about her parents' involvement in creating and sustaining the church that is ours today. Nancy Harms remembers one of her Boise State professors discussing debt and people's attitudes toward it. And one of the first things that he did in class was to show the picture of Nell in her 90s roaring along on the back of his motorcycle. His point was clear. People can stay dynamic and vibrant and alive up to the time they die when they're willing to try new things and keep on having new adventures. Clearly, Nell's spirit was Unitarian Universalist at our best, genuinely open to new ways of being. As for what she and her family and others did to make our church thrive, well, she and they just did what needed to be done, as far as I can tell, which is what pioneers do when you think about it. If she and Vern, along with Ethel Hopper and Inez Duncan and others, hadn't just kept on keeping on, always looking for ways to strengthen this fledgling baby institution, we wouldn't be here in this building today on these lovely grounds. Heroes almost never cop to being heroes. They almost always just say, we were doing what needed to be done. It's what it takes in all times. What needs to be done today, here and now, for us in this congregation, which is like genuinely welcoming more and more people to our saving message, creating whole church ways to do social justice, learning how to organize in ways that let us do our important spiritual work, raising a $300,000 budget, those are all different from the old days, when they were creating everything from scratch. But we're just like our faithful forebears. We also just need to do what needs to be done, because we are pioneering for who knows what amazing future. Can you imagine what Nell and the others would think after meeting in the basements of their homes and all kinds of places, if they could be here right now at this moment? I think they'd be amazed. A parenthetical sort of a comment. Sometimes we ask why we seem to remember Ethel Hopper more clearly than her sister Nell, who was obviously very important. And Julie's short answer was, Ethel made cookies. It would seem that Nell's organizational and managerial skills, while formidable and necessary, didn't stay in people's memories quite the way cookies and pansies have. The church always needs both. Besides determination, leadership, and organizational abilities, Nell made a couple of other vital contributions to the values and the character of our congregation. She gave us an understanding that we are more than a group of discussers and thinkers, that we are about the business of religion in the best sense, honoring mystery, appreciating life's gifts. And she also contributed a positive, forward-looking attitude in which we take responsibility for making things better. Alice Walker said, "The grace with which we embrace life in spite of the pain, the sorrow, is always a measure of what has gone before." John Dewey used the word grace too. We are here by the grace of those who went before. Nell bequeathed us grace. Elaine Durbin remembers her own emergence from years of a fairly intense philosophical existentialism, kind of a nihilism, basically denying that there is meaning in anything. And now that path can lead to despair. And Elaine had gone through that particular valley. She had begun her return to matters of the spirit through Ralph Waldo Emerson, and she found sustenance here in Nell's prosaic and deep assumption that there is mystery in this universe, that there is cause for awe and reverence. This was a period of time when Unitarian Universalists as a movement were just beginning to move out of a negativistic, materialistic humanism. And Nell was very much in the forefront of her generation. Our emphasis on reason alone, we can figure it all out with our heads, had taken us a distance away from our souls. People like Vern and Nell, who believed deeply in a non-dogmatic, non-creedal, humble attitude toward the great whatever, have helped us move our church and our movement toward wholeness. It was simply part of their being to know that human reason is only one path toward truth, and that there is staggering truth to be found in faith and practice. Her forward-looking positive attitude is embodied humorously in a story that William McQuillan tells. The old UU attitudes, in addition to being skeptical and sometimes cynical, could also be very negative. They weren't always, but they could be. Complaining without creating. Now, here's a parenthetical thing. I'm going to have a problem telling this little story, quoting William, because it involves quoting Nell saying a common four-letter word that begins with S and ends with T. And I am incapable of saying that from the pulpit. So bear with me when it comes up. You'll know what I'm talking about, okay? These are William's words. William writes this. As the group sat in the fellowship hall, bemoaning all the problems in the world, she stood up and said, "I have never used this word before, in public or in private, but why do Unitarians think life is?" William goes on to say in his words, "Whenever I start to think that life is unfair and the world is doomed, I remember those words. If you don't like it, fix it. You are responsible for your own attitude." Nell Tregaskis was a fascinating woman. By knowing her a little, we can move toward a bit of intimacy with our past, getting closer to that line that stretches all the way back to who knows where, perhaps even God. John Dewey speaks of the continuous human community in which we are a link. And learning about Nell, besides being interesting and fun, reminds us that we too will affect everything that comes after us, one way or another. I wonder, what can I do to make it more likely that the future that I influence will maybe, just maybe, be better because of me? What do you have to offer of your best self that could make our kids' worlds more loving or more just or more generous? And what and how can we be with each other to hold up hope and faith? Like Nell and everybody who's ever done anything, we don't really know the answers to these questions, and we'll immobilize ourselves if we sit down and try to figure them out. But we can go ahead as what we do, that is to say, doing what needs to be done, with the questions in our heart, carried lightly and with a smile. We can do our human best to walk in as much rightness as we can, reconciling and carrying on when we stumble. I want to leave with a couple of Nell anecdotes from the later part of her life. William remembers learning things from a lecture that she delivered in some class in her 90s. The subject was sexuality. And here, finally, is a recollection from Charlotte. She says, "One day, Nell took to her bed and told people not to revive her if she stopped breathing. Well, she did stop breathing, and they did revive her to her surprise and annoyance. I don't think she tried that one again."